It's showtime, folks. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Wednesday. Hope you're having a good start to your day. He's Big Joe, Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier with you on the ones and twos. What's up,
Joe? Man, if you don't get outside today for about 20, 30 minutes and there's something wrong, so get outside. It's going to be a beautiful day. And we love beautiful days.
I'm planning on it. I am not going to let the BS of the world bring me down, and I'm going to go enjoy the nice weather.
Well, you got your pickleball match at one, so.
Dr. Crane's my doubles partner.
Yep.
So against the Flying Ernies, baby. Better watch out.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. Flying Ernies are actually two elderly ladies who live in Bellevue who are over 80 who are killing the circuit.
They whip our ass.
And watch out, Sandy.
Take you Sandy, I remember you got in the kitchen one time, and she's like, get your ass out of the kitchen, and just hit one right at your face. And I laughed. Sandy and Ethel, they are
cast iron skillet to the face.
Right.
Don't look, Ethel.
But it was too late.
Yes. John McClain going to join us at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on the combine and all that fun stuff going on. Looks like, you know, this is the time of year where stuff starts to come out. And according to Adam Schefter and others, the Tennessee Titans are allowing linebacker Harold Landry to seek a trade. So Harold's time in Nashville could be over.
In the words of, I forget his name, the actor from Tombstone, well, bye. See ya, Harold. Take care of yourself.
I mean,
Nobody wants him.
I don't blame. I mean, I don't know. I thought Robbie and Joe said it best. He's a good player. He's never been a great player. You know, and that's the and he got overpaid, which is kind of the price of doing business sometimes.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, and so it's the contract. They want to get out of the contract, and you know, my guess is they won't get much for him. But if you can get a team that's willing to take the whole deal, which is a $24 million cap hit in 2025, $17.5 million in cash. I doubt a team's going to want to take that whole deal, but if they do, then yeah, you take whatever they give you back.
Let's call up Haslam in Cleveland. He's a bonehead. He'll take a shot at Harold Landry. I mean, that just nobody's paying that for that guy. You're going to pay for average? Is average $17 million? Go.
No.
Go away.
Yeah.
Your time here, you've done. You don't scare me.
Here's what I think. You need to be prepared for. And I don't know how much of
already had a colonoscopy.
I don't know how much of Mike Borgonzi you heard yesterday, but there was a lot of Floyd, a lot of saying a lot of stuff, but not showing everything. And mm-hmm. I like that. Like I walked away going like, I like this guy. I can tell I'm going to like him. I kind of have a feeling you need to be prepared for, as Barry Trotz likes to put it, a little pain. And I know there's been a lot of pain already, but this is going to be pain that's going to have a good end result if done correctly. They're going to have to strip away some things, Harold Landry being one of those, and build this the right way. It hasn't been rebuilt the right way.
Okay.
Now Borgonzi has to do that.
And I think – this is just me. I think Brian Callahan's done. I think they have given up on the 25 season. Has a rebuilding year, I don't think he's anywhere in their plans. That's just my takeaway.
I'm not ready to go that far yet, but I don't know if you're crazy.
At
least on that, you're crazy.
Callahan talked yesterday and said nothing. I thought you said it great. He said a whole lot without saying anything.
Yeah.
And then Borgonzi. I want Borgonzi to say Cuba, which – makes me laugh because people from Boston area,
Cuba.
They had the like John Kennedy would like Matt Cuba, and then you would laugh. Guess what? It made me laugh because look, that's where you're from, and don't be embarrassed by that. I think it's funny. So I just think there's a whole plan now that doesn't include Callahan. That's just me. Like we're gonna get to the 25 season. He's talked to Amy, and that's it. We're gonna work for 26 and beyond.
We will obviously get back into that and much more later on. Predators fall 4-1 to the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers last night. Let's bring in forward Michael McCarron, who joins us now. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, look, obviously a tough one, but I want to have a little fun with you because it was 90s night at Bridgestone Arena. I'm a big wrestling guy. I don't know if you are, but DJ Battle was playing a lot of 90s wrestling themes, and he plays the D-Generation X theme, and immediately you drop the gloves, which I thought was so perfect. I don't know if you got fired up by hearing DX, but that was an awesome moment because I was laughing and like, go get a mic.
Yeah, no, I didn't even notice that. I was, I guess I was in the zone. It was just one of those things where some momentum had to be changed, and you know, sometimes you got to do that.
I know that obviously this season's been tough for you guys, but you know, you look at it last night in particular, scoreboard aside. I mean, you know, what were your takeaways from the game?
To start, I don't think we were quite ready off the jump. They buzzed us pretty early. Credit to them. I mean, they're pretty fast, pretty good team. They're a Stanley Cup winning team for a reason. They got most of their guys back, but I thought we handled ourselves pretty well going into the second period. I think we grabbed some momentum back, and even in the third, I mean, we made it a one score game, and then you know, they got kind of a fluky goal to go up 3-1 for their insurance goal. I think that kind of deflated us a little bit, but yeah, I think we battled hard. There were some times in the game where, you know, we were hemming them in pretty good and had some good offensive chances. I think the story for us this year is, number one, I don't think we've played too many full 60-minute games, and number two, I don't think we've capitalized on our chances. Pucks just haven't been going in for us, and unfortunately, in this game, you got to score goals to win games. So I think those two things have kind of been burning us a little bit.
We're talking to Michael McCarron on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Michael, thanks for doing this. On this show, Chase, my co-host, asks all the good questions. I ask all the really stupid ones.
He's heard me ask bad questions. Don't worry.
Here's the one I ask all your teammates that come on, and I like getting your perspective on this. What's the fine line between what's going on right now by being mad or frustrated? What's the fine line between being mad and frustrated?
That's a tough question. I don't know what the other guys have been saying, but frustration, I think, can overwhelm you. I think when you get mad, you can kind of play a little bit more angry, I'd say. You know, when things aren't going good, it really tests you mentally, and you know, you can take it one of two ways. I guess you can go the frustration side, and I think that can kind of take over you and maybe not help you for the better. And I think when you get mad, sometimes getting mad is good. I think you can play mad, you can play angry, and it may bring out the best in you, or it may cripple you. It just depends on how you handle that mentally. And I think frustration, I think you gotta kind of block that one out, because very easy to get frustrated right now with the season we're having. And I think I think you can use that and get angry and get mad, and it could help you.
Well, you answered better than your teammates, so you win that one. Good job, Michael, for that one today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, what's one thing on the ice? You know, when you go out there, look, you want to win games, you want to score, and you don't want to get in, you know, scrums, you don't have to. But what's a no-no to you? Is it something, if I insult your family, are you coming after me? Is there a no-no, that a line that somebody crosses that you're going to just beat the snot out of them?
Hit your captain.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that. I was going to say, yeah, just last night, I mean, real bad, dirty hit from behind on our captain who sets him out of the game. I think things like that, guys can pretty much say whatever they want. I think, you know, there's a lot of chirping going on. I think, you know, words are just words. When it becomes actions and bad actions at that, like hitting our captain from behind, the guy only sees numbers for – 4 or 5 steps before he hits them from behind. I think those kind of things are a no-no, and our team knows that. And you saw our response last night. I think we went right after him, and things like that. That just, you know, there's still an aspect of the game where you got to have some integrity and some, you know, I don't know. It's things. Those things can't happen in a game, and like I said, our team knows that, and we answer the bell.
Michael McCarron is with us. And, yeah, just kind of expanding on that a little bit, because I was going to ask you about that, of, you know, Sam Bennett and that hit. I mean, you know, you guys took care of it, and there's things that happen. But, you know, then what does that do for the rest of the game, of just the attitude between you and the other players, even the guys that weren't even involved in the play, of just is that does that just kind of change the whole aspect of everything?
Well, yeah, I think at first, you know, guys try to grab him, like Schenner tries to grab him, and he doesn't want to fight. And like, as a hockey player, there's a little bit of a code there that, you know, if you have a bad hit or you do something bad, you got to answer the bell. And I think once he doesn't do that, then, you know, guys get mad and take it out on someone else. I mean, you know, thankfully he dropped the gloves with Smitty and, you know, he answered the bell. But even then, I think, you know, it does change the momentum of the game. It changed your mindset a little bit that, you know, kind of, you know, screw these guys. Like, let's go right after them. And it does amp up the adrenaline, I'd say, in our group. And, I mean, like you saw, it came out in the third period. We came out hard and heavy. And, you know, we were able to get one early there. And, you know, and then Smitty drops the gloves, which was nice.
Michael McCarron with us on the show. Now, Michael, there's a question that I hope you answer perfectly. Are you a better player right now than you were at 21 years old? Just a yes or no?
Yes, I would say so.
All right, so next week you turn 30, by the way. Congratulations. Happy early birthday to you.
So, thank you. Appreciate it.
So my thing, and Chase knows this well on our show, age to us is not a factor because I think you get better, and like Tom Brady played into his 40s. I think the whole, you know, when you hit 30, he's 30, he's going downhill. But I look at you, you're turned 30, you're playing at the top of your game, you're getting better all the time. Is that just a bunch of crap when we talk about turning 30 and these different ages?
I would say so. I mean, you know, 21, you're a little bit immature. You don't know the game quite as well. I think the older you get, the more plays you see throughout your career, and the more, you know, you can start to see plays happening before they happen. I think, you know, maturity is a huge thing in this game. I think there's still a huge part for some older guys in this game. I know it's turning young, but, you know, at the same time, hockey sense is a huge thing. And, I mean, you see a guy like Ryan O'Reilly who may not be the fastest player in the league, but he's a number one center for a reason. He's probably the smartest guy I've ever played with.
Right.
He's always in the right position. And, you know, things like that really do play in. So, I mean, obviously all the young guys have a ton of skill coming up, and they can score, they can shoot the puck, and it's great to see. But like I said, at the same time, you need guys like Factor, and you need some older guys that can see the game, like Sisson's even, you know, a really good hockey sense player that just seems to always be in the right position and can see a play coming, you know, 2-3 seconds before it comes. So age is only a thing if you don't treat your body right. So as long as guys are keeping their body in good shape and in the right way, I think, you know, age can only help you.
Great answer. By the way, next Friday, which is your birthday, I'm going to have Chase jump out of a birthday cake and sing to you like Marilyn Monroe. So get ready for that next weekend.
I'm looking forward to it.
I don't know if he'd like that or not. Michael McCarron is with us. By the way, I have been told to say go Spartans by one Nick Barnowski because your Michigan State Spartans had a nice win last week against Michigan.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I grew up a big Sparty fan, my whole household, and my sister went there. I didn't end up going to college, but, you know, tons of family, aunts and uncles and cousins and stuff like that all went to Michigan State, and I just grew up a huge Michigan State fan, and we grew up hating the Maize and Blue, and it's a great, great little rivalry within our state of Michigan. So I'm always rooting for Sparty.
Well, we get that a lot around here because Derek Mason, who's on our midday show, obviously played football at Michigan State. So he's all about the green and the white.
Very good. Well, say hi for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Real quick before you go, I always like asking this question. I told you, I don't have many questions, Michael. I just recycle all of them. Do you still have the puck when you scored your first goal?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I was in Montreal when I scored my first goal playing for them, and I have a little plaque with the puck on it. Yeah, of course. I wouldn't lose that thing for anything.
Tell me it's not on, like, in a drawer somewhere. It is, isn't it?
I think it might be.
Oh, man. Well, now you have a reason to put it out and show everybody when they come over.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Maybe I'll bring it out. I don't know how the wife will react, but we'll see. We'll see if she lets me put it out there.
All right, good, good.
Awesome. Mike, thanks so much for doing this, and good luck Thursday against Winnipeg.
Thanks, Chase and Joe. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. See you, bud.
Bye-bye.
Michael McCarron joining us here on the show, Predators forward, and they're back in action Thursday night against Winnipeg. I do want to talk about more with the Preds,
yeah.
Some comments Barry Trotz made yesterday.
He said our name.
He did.
They've said your name before.
Yeah.
They've never said my name.
Congratulations.
So this is a good day.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chase.
Yeah, congratulations.
All right, buddy.
Barry Trotz had some pretty interesting comments with Jared yesterday. You'll hear from him coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
How do you shake things up as far as the roster is concerned? Would you go to one of your guys if you felt like there was an opportunity and ask them to waive a no-movement clause? How do you feel about that?
100%. 100%. I owe that to the team. I owe that to our staff. I owe it to the ownership, and I owe it to our fans. So if there is something that someone said, hey, you know, would you think about this, or if I propose something, if it made some sense, I would have no problem going to the player and say, listen, it's not working. You know, would you consider this?
That was Barry Trotz yesterday on Stillman & Company. He's on every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. That was very telling to me, Joe. You know, he's willing to go to guys that have trade protection. And it's pretty apparent who they are now. You know, that Forsberg has it. Josi has it. Saros will have it at some point. I mean, they're basically all the big guns have trade protection.
All right, let's role play. Okay. You're Barry Trotz. I am unnamed Predators player.
Okay.
Go.
Well, I'll just call you Joe.
Okay.
How about that?
Sure.
Joe, listen, you know, it's no secret. Things have not gone well this year.
Yeah, you're right.
Got a few calls from some contenders that are interested in you. Would love to have your services.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice.
Would you be willing to waive your trade protection?
No. Okay. All right. Have a good day.
I mean.
Is that how it is?
No. because look. If he gets a phone call from, you know, a team, let me just pull up the standings real quick because I want to make sure I have
Florida.
A good example. Okay, let's say Florida calls and Florida wants Steven Stamkos.
Okay,
I mean it's a better chance for him to win another cup than he's currently in right now. So now, granted. The reason a lot of these guys want that kind of protection is they have families and they don't want to move them around and all that stuff. And obviously leaving Tampa. Here's a better example. Let's say he goes to Stamkos and goes, hey, Tampa wants you back. I think he'd waive it in a heartbeat.
Okay. Yeah.
To go back to Tampa.
But if I say no, what's your fallback?
You go to the next guy. I mean,
so you've got no collateral here if you're Barry Trotz.
No,
the guy says
no, but he knows that.
Why do they put these? And we talked off the air, but I want you to explain why in the hell are these no trade clause in there?
It's from a player standpoint, I'm all for it. I get it because it gives you more control that you know you're going to be with the team that signed you, and they don't have that control to move you whenever they want.
Good Lord!
But from a team standpoint, it does tie your hands.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've given the player that much control that now, you know, if Carolina's coming to you offering you a first-round pick and a really good prospect for X player, and they're like, well, I don't want to go to Raleigh, North Carolina.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever heard anybody say, man, I'm glad we signed Chase that no-trade clause. I'm really proud. I've never heard anybody say that.
Have you ever met anybody that used to have a bad back?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of the same thing.
It is. So I don't – it's just frustrating the part because you never know. And we laughed about Belichick in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, those guys didn't get second – a lot of them did not get second contracts because he knew he could go out and evaluate players and bring guys in. He had a couple superstars and go that way. It's tough. I mean, in this way, it's not working out. But, I mean, if you're calling and like, well, he don't want to get a trade. All right, take care. He's don't want to move his family. But I mean, you ask, right? You got to ask.
Yeah, you ask. I mean, look, everything's going to be a no until you ask. Here's my thing, and this could be considered maybe a hot take. I don't know. I think in all sports, there should be max contracts of 4 years. Now, you can do whatever you want with the money. depending on the sport. Like, if you want to pay a guy, you know, $11 million a year for 4 years, that's fine.
Yep.
But the length of the contract should be 4 years because so much changes in that amount of time, both for the team and the player. Now, maybe you work some stuff in there that, you know, if you sign them to a certain amount, there's a exclusive negotiating window or whatever. But, you know, these eight-year deals, like, look, we'll just say it. The UC Saros contract hasn't even kicked in yet. And you're going to be stuck with that for 8 years. And if this is what he is, now I think I know I'm going to get beat up for this.
Yeah.
I think he obviously has not played well enough.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
There's been other things too with the team. The rest of the team hadn't played well either.
Okay.
So I think there is a chance he could turn this around next year if everybody else is playing better. But it is a big what if.
You got no choice, right? He's got to come back, right?
Right. I mean, you could, in theory, call a team and say, hey, I'll give you Saros for basically a bag of pucks. And you could do that before the new contract kicks in. But then you're barely getting anything for, you know, a good player. You're now starting over at goal. And your reputation as a general manager takes a big hit because it's like, man, you just signed this guy to an eight-year deal and now you're going to get rid of him before it even starts.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, you know, and I don't think he's going to do that. But I did find it interesting that he's willing to go to guys and, like, see if – and look, you can read between the lines on that because I mean, I think there are some certain guys that he should do that to. That he, because it's just, they just haven't fit. Now, the other part of this, and I know we're going to get to John McClain, but I want to hit this real quick. Jared asked him about Brunette.
Uh-huh.
So listen to this real quick.
Because I'm looking for kind of a big change that might kind of shift the equilibrium around here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't do it on a roster front, then wouldn't the next logical step be the coach?
I think everybody looks at it that way. I look at it probably a little differently. The response that we get from now to the end of the year, and then obviously we're going to have meetings with the players. I'm going to have a really good feel with direction. I mean, I'm with you. I think Andrew's a hell of a good coach, but at the same time, there has to be the roster and the coach have to, you know, have that be in sync in all aspects. So I'm running this to the end. We'll assess and we'll make our decisions.
This is just my speculation. I don't have anything to back this up. Just listening to that clip, I think he's already made his answer, or made his decision. I think he has his answer.
I will add, for a general manager to have the stones to come on a radio show in the midst of what's going on is something else.
I love it. I respect the hell out of it. I mean, he was like that as a coach, and now he's like that as a GM.
I just think you tune in, and Jared doesn't hold back, and there's the questions, and I just think it gives you an insight. And so I feel more part of what the Preds are doing than I ever will with what the Titans are doing.
Well,
I'm a nobody. I'm an absolute nobody.
Of course.
But the man pulled back the curtain,
sure.
And I'm like, all right, what's going on here? What do we got?
And it's the old – Saban thing. Barry Trotz is saying that to Jared because he's on his show, but he's also saying that to the team. He's making sure that that gets out there.
And it is.
It's calculated, for sure. And look, I think everybody shares the – I think Andrew Brunette's a good coach. It's just this system he's trying to run hadn't fit this roster. And as Barry said, the roster and the system have to match up, and it appears that they're not. I think it's pointing in that direction unless some of those players that aren't matching up to the system, you know, are in that group of, yeah, I think I need to go somewhere else, and then they move them.
Next Friday, trade deadline?
Yeah.
7th?
March 7th.
It's McCarron's birthday. It's a big day.
It is. And look, I mean, he's certainly one that could be dealt.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I hope not. But, I mean, he's just with the contract and all that, you know. Potentially could happen. So
you get my hopes up and trade my new favorite player. Thanks, Chase.
We will get back into the Preds in the 10 o'clock hour, but we'll shift gears. We'll talk to our man John McClain coming up next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. The late, great Toby Keith. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday. all the stuff going on from the NFL Combine, presented by the New Cumberland and Boomba's Pizza, the New Cumberland Nashville's resort-style community overlooking downtown on the Cumberland River, and Boomba's. Go try their award-winning pizzas at one of their locations in East Nashville, Spring Hill, and Murfreesboro. Boomba's Pizza and Watch Bar. Eat, drink, watch. Let's say hello now to John McClain. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John's covered a combine or two in his day. How you doing, John?
I couldn't be better, guys. Thank you very much.
I will never forget a fun moment probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago in Indianapolis. I sat down to eat lunch in the media room with Floyd Reese. You sat down, and I just sat there and didn't talk for about 30 minutes because the stories were fantastic.
Yeah, I had a lot of great times covering Floyd here and there as well, and a lot of great stories. The media is not able to do the things today with coaches and general managers and assistant coaches and players we were able to do back then and build relationships with people like Floyd Reese and Jeff Fisher, who are two of my all-time favorite general managers and head coaches. Had so many great times with them up there. I'll tell you a quick one since you brought
this
up. Yes,
absolutely.
When I was covering the NFL after Nashville got the Oilers, and this was when they were still the Tennessee Oilers, and I, because it was so new, I spent a lot of time up there the first season as I traveled around the league and began to fall in love with the city. And they had that old terrible facility out in, Baptist. What was it called?
Out in Bellevue, the trailers?
Yeah, Bellevue.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were in the doctor's offices.
Yep.
And they had the trailers. Fisher had to pay out of his pocket or a partition to go down the middle of the trailer so you could separate offense and defense. So a couple of the media guys there told the PR people that when I came in there, I got preferential treatment. So I asked Floyd if we could do this, and it's the only time I've ever done this in my 52-year career, and this is my 49th covering the NFL. I came into town on a Wednesday after covering a Monday night game somewhere, and they were practicing, and this is what we had cooked up. At that point, the local media was kept down kind of in a corner outside the media trailer, and I walked by everybody, waved at them. I walked down the sideline. I walked out on the field behind where they were lining up, practicing, taking snaps, and Floyd and Jeff came over, and I acted like I was writing on a notepad and interviewing them on the field during practice. Dave Pearson was the PR guy back then. Dave's now with Seattle. And I could see guys down there just throwing a fit that I was getting that kind of preferential treatment. And then I walked back down there and told them it was all a joke. And I bought pizza on the Houston Chronicle for everybody at lunch. And there's not another general manager and head coach that would go along with something like that. And they did. And that's why they're two of my all-time favorites. And I had a blast when I used to come up there and get to hang out and with them and get to talk to them a lot, which we always did here as well. And I got one more, and I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. We love this.
Lord, go.
You guys got to tell me if I've already told this recently, the Floyd Reese, Cody Carlson contract story.
No.
Okay. It was training camp. They had traded Warren Moon in 94 because he wouldn't redo his contract. Cody Carlson was the backup. They gave Cody a new deal. We were at training camp in San Antonio, and I got the numbers, as I was always able to do, and Floyd used to have a fit because back then the media agents didn't give contracts. Nobody did, but I had contracts. And so I'm on the sideline that day, and Floyd says, you got the wrong numbers in your story today. I said, no, I didn't. Yes, you did. And we started arguing. He He said, look, if you don't believe me, come when you're finished doing your interviews, come up to my office and I'll show it to you. I said, okay. So I did my interviews. I messed around. I eventually got back up there. He was waiting with the contract, and he showed it to me. He explained everything, showed the numbers and all that. And I'm like, wow, man, I gotta write a correction. No, you don't need to write a correction. I just wanted you to know you're not always right when it comes to these numbers. And I said, okay. A couple of days later, his secretary, I see her in the cafeteria, and she says, do you know why Floyd came sprinting into the office the other day, sweating like crazy after practice, and asked me to type up a new contract for Cody Carlson and put these numbers, some numbers he had in there? And I said, holy bleep. I didn't act like she had spilled some beans. And I said, no, I don't know. And I casually walked out, and I went up to Floyd later. And I said, it's a good thing you didn't pull a muscle on Monday. He said, what do you mean? I said, the way you sprinted back to your office and drew up a fake Cody Carlson contract just so you could prove to me I had the wrong numbers. And once again, I was right and you were wrong. And it's the only time I've ever seen Floyd Reese speechless.
Oh, that's so great. No, I haven't told that one. That's wonderful. I was talking to John McClain here on the Chase and Big Joe show. John, I had to laugh. When you first started covering the Houston Oilers, mid-70s, right?
Yeah, my first training camp was in 77.
What was the salary cap? Did they even have a salary cap back then?
Oh. No, they didn't have a salary cap back then, and nobody knew what anybody made. They were just starting to get agents, and agents wouldn't talk among themselves because the teams wanted everything kept quiet when it came to who was making what.
Well, I just laugh because rumors are out there that Matthew Stafford wants $50 million a year. And I know there are quarterbacks who make more, but I just started to laugh at $50 million. I think $50 million might have been more than the Oilers' payroll in 77, 70. I mean, I'm guessing, right?
Oh, my God. It'd been more than every team's payroll in the NFL back then. In 1983, the highest paid player in the league was Kenny Stabler at $300,000 a year. In 1984, Warren Moon signed as an unrestricted free agent from Canada with the Oilers for the most money in history, and everybody was blown away. 5 years, $5 million. Nobody could believe Bud Adams was going to make a player highest in history at $5 million. And then a couple months later, Dan Marino had his redone to make a little more than Warren. And that's what the pay scales were like back then. And Matthew Stafford at 50 would still be $10 million behind Dak Prescott. And that's why they're letting his agent look around to see if he can find a team that'll pay him $50 million a year, because he's due to make 27. And they'd probably give him 40, but I don't think he'll be gone. But today, there was a time, guys, when running backs made more money than quarterbacks because they were more valuable.
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you this. I like Matthew Stafford. I think if the Titans somehow brought him in here as that old quote-unquote bridge quarterback, I'm fine with it. I just
sign me up.
It's just $50 million I'm making. That's a lot of money. But when you talk about Dak making more than a quarter, that's what it's going for now. I would love to see Stafford in Nashville, John.
Well, that's not going to happen. Also, I wouldn't want a guy, when I have a bad team trying to rebuild, a guy that's that old, it's going to take up that kind of money. I'd rather take my lumps with a lesser guy and spend that money somewhere else, because Matthew Stafford is not going to help that team go to the playoffs, at least not the first year. And if you can't protect him, you're just spinning your wheels. That's all the talk about the Giants and Stafford. My God, their team's terrible. Their offensive line is terrible. They don't have a running game. All those things he has with the Rams. So I don't know where – I think he'll end up with the Rams, because I don't think there's teams willing to give him. He'll be 38 this year, and I don't think there's teams willing to give him that kind of money at this late stage of his career.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday, continuing our conversation with John McClain. And, John, the news coming out today that the Titans have given Harold Landry permission to seek a trade. Adam Schefter and others reporting that. I mean, it's that time of year. What does that process involve? Is it the GM talking to the agent and then the agent kind of takes it from there? How does that all work?
They let the agent start calling around teams to find out if they're interested. If he's trying to get more money like Stafford is, who'd be interested in paying it? And then you come back to the GM, you say, well, we got one, two, three, or none. And that's the way it works.
When you look at a player like Landry, I mean, you've seen him obviously the last few years, a couple times a year. I mean, do you think there would be a market for him?
Pass rushers, there's always a market for pass rushers. If you see guys, they get five sacks today and people act like there's something special. And it just depends on the money, how much cap room you've got, how much you want to spend. And a team like New England has got like $120 million before they even announced the increase in the cap, which could be up to $126 million. And they will roll over a lot of that for next year because Mike Vrabel knows they're still going to be rebuilding. And that's one reason he wanted to go to New England. Not only does he have a great young quarterback in place, but he's loaded with cap room to help build around him over the next couple of years to where they can be legitimate again.
We're talking to John McClain on the Chase and Big Joe Show. John, I could look this up and Google it, but I don't want to. How did the genesis of Indianapolis and the Combine happen? You were there all those years. Why was Indianapolis chosen as the city for the Combine?
Because of its central location, and that was in 87. At that point, they had a couple of Combines put together by the late Gil Brandt from the Cowboys, like one might be in Seattle, different parts of the country, and then other times teams were flying all over the country, and all of a sudden somebody, and it might have been Gil, I can't remember, came up with the idea, well, let's have one central location. It makes it easier for people to fly from Boston, Seattle, San Diego, and Miami, and Indy gave them whatever they wanted, which was great, what they needed downtown. At the time, it was the RCA Dome. You were able to walk everywhere, and they've improved downtown even more since then, but that's how it went. Now they're worried. Indy has 1 year left on his contract, and they're shopping it around, and everybody in the league wants it to be in Indy because you never have to be outdoors. Everything's connected by walkways, but you know, owners, because owners are in the poorhouse and don't make any money, if somebody offers them more money that they can make instead of being in Indy, they'll do it. The place in Frisco, where the Cowboys train, has a great Omni Hotel right there for the players, has the Cowboys facility indoors right there for the players, has the Cowboys 3 practice fields outside, has everything you want except walkability. So people would have to drive and fight traffic, which is what the people going to the Combine don't want to have to do. Another advantage there is they have a hospital right there. So players wouldn't have to walk out of their hotel, get on a shuttle, and be shuttled to the hospital for their physicals. So, and L.A. wants it really bad. I think Stan Kroenke, when he spent like $4 or $5 billion, thought he was going to get the Combine at some point. I've seen other cities on the list, but I have heard that nobody is as serious or has as good a chance as L.A. and Frisco, if indeed they leave Indy, and everybody is hoping Indy comes up with whatever the NFL is looking for.
Well, what about Nashville with the new Dome Stadium?
Nashville would be a good place to have it because all the hotels, of course, are right there. You got the stadium, the hospital is important. You know, it's not like you can walk out the door of the stadium and walk into the hotel and the hospital, which you have in Frisco. But that's what they're looking for, central location, there where everybody can walk everywhere. And if they didn't walk, they wouldn't have to be shuttled far. But the problem you've got there is you got a lot of downtown traffic, You got all that construction going on down there, and I don't see the streets getting any wider.
I'm always curious, John, will they ever open it up to the fans? Because I'm sure fans would pay top dollar to see guys run the 40-yard dash. And the fact that it's like, well, we want it quiet, I think the players would get off on that.
You know, they have done that. They let fans go in there. They started doing that with the bench press because they have a section of stands for fans, and everybody gets off on the bench press when some guys hits 40 and he's going for 50. Those guys never pan out to be the best players, but they get into it, and then nothing gets people fired up, whether it's players, media, coaches, GMs, like the need for speed, the 40-yard dashes, especially today when they all have personalized trainers that their agents pay a lot of money, which means it's coming out of the player's contract, to train them in every drill, including the 40, and, of course, in the strength. And I saw a thing yesterday where a quarterback, can't remember who it was, they said his hand size was too small, which they said about Joe Burrow and others. And so he found a hand specialist who could stretch his ligaments. And when he put his hand down on the thing that measures from little finger to thumb, that his fingers, I don't know if it'd be a half inch, quarter of an inch, but if it works, that hand doctor's specialist is going to get a lot of people throwing the – now, it may have the bigger hand, but he may not be able to grip or throw the football anymore.
That would be something. John,
I'll tell you another quick thing.
Go ahead.
The New York Giants used to have a test, 500 questions, when they met with players, and the players all thought it was ridiculous, and they tried to answer them. 1986, Keyshawn Johnson was, who would be the first overall pick, was complaining about that test. And somebody said, well, what's the weirdest question you got? And he said, do you like tall women? And he, somebody said, well, what'd you put? He said, I crossed out the T and put a check mark.
I had to think about that.
For oh, that's great.
Oh, John, great stuff as always. We appreciate it. We'll do it next week.
Guys, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us on the program. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work and the combine, the workouts getting underway. Borgonzi and Callahan spoke yesterday. By the way, did you know the lay of the land and how it was all set up and how fantastic this was of who was next to Brian Callahan?
They knew exactly what they were doing. Probably
old,
not.
Old Vrabes over yeah. there. You have a topic for the 10 o'clock hour.
All right, so for the Titans, and I've been thinking about this a lot, and I keep hearing this guy's name, quarterback name. And if the Titans don't trade out, but they don't draft a quarterback first, but second, and they get these two players, I want to know if you will do it. Let me tell you now or wait till after the break?
Wait until after the break.
Okay.
We'll set it up. Chase.
Probably
you,
not.
Thank you, Mike. Hour number two coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.